And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary Gilbert. My co-host, Dan Ford. How you doing, Dan? Or should I say, top of the morning to you, mate. Welcome to Orlin. We're in Orlin for St. Patrick's Day. Would you like a point? A point to Guinness.
That surprised me. This is my Irish accent. This is how I sound when I'm in Ireland. I sound like a South African.
Top of the morning, mate.
Let's do voices for 2 hours.
2 hours, we're here on the Power Hour for Ireland. All right, so yeah, happy St. Patrick's Day. This show should be going up, I would imagine, around St. Patrick's Day. Our beloved leader, Mr. Coughlin, hopefully he's not too drunk in the morning and he can't post the show.
That's right. He's got the whiskey blood, doesn't he?
Is he Irish? Oh boy,
Coughlin's an Irish name.
Yeah, I better hold off some of my racist Irish humor for another time.
But we all know they have no souls. Like that's well established.
Duh. And they're just trash people. But before we get rid of all of our Irish listeners, which I'm sure we have none, we're recording this on a Thursday. And March Madness tipped off today. Well, kinda. The real March Madness, the real NCAA tournament tipped off today, Dan. I believe you're a little too busy working today, but you heard some stuff. Did you hear some news? What kind of floated out to people who weren't paying attention today?
Well, I mean, the biggest news of the day had to be that Northwestern Vanderbilt game, right?
Yes. You don't get much bigger than Northwestern. Did you know a lot of journalists with Northwestern? I didn't know.
As a media, I've never actually heard that pronounced. I've only ever seen people derisively make fun of it on Twitter. But as a metal grand,
Metal Gear Solid.
As a graduate of Metal Gear Solid, I can say that I believe in lots of conspiracy theories. But yeah, I don't know. Northwestern kids are excited that they finally made it.
Yeah, that game was a heartbreaker. Heart goes out to the kid from Vandy. Sucks, but you know, stay in school. You're going to get a better education than most people. So, there you go, kid from Vandy. Everyone's going to hate you the rest of your life, but you'll be rich. So, fuck them.
I've always been shocked Vanderbilt isn't like... I mean, I know you're never going to be ahead of Kentucky, but I've always been shocked that they're not, like, the SEC's second-best team.
Yeah, it doesn't... You think that's a school that'd be prime for basketball, but I think... There's just not a ton of talent left over after the ACC kind of gets done with the South. And
that's true.
I think if you're like a Midwestern kid, well, if you're looking for academics, you can always go to Notre Dame, which is a pretty damn good school.
So, kids in the Deep South just don't play basketball. That's the real moral of the story.
And we need more kids in the South playing basketball. I think. Get them away from football and get them to basketball where they can make real money and not come out brain-dead morons. So. Sure. The only, you know, only way your brain's dying playing basketball is from doing too many drugs and having too much sex and eating too much money. Eating the money, baby.
As long as we just don't let them play baseball, because I don't know, man. We don't need America's southern black youth buying truck nuts.
No. I think just in general, we don't need anyone playing baseball, because baseball can turn the best person into a giant douchebag. Very hard to find a baseball player who's worth it. You know what, Dan? There was some baseball news today.
Hit me.
I don't know if you saw that. The young pitcher for the Marlins that passed away last summer, Jose. Is this Jose? I would say Jose Fernandez. Is that right?
That sounds right.
Yeah. He turns out the boat wreck he was in, he was driving and he was high on drugs and drunk. So that's why every time I hear that a baseball player died in a car accident, I just think. Well, at least they didn't kill anybody else. Because most of the time they're drunk. Let's be honest.
Every Florida man's dream is to die drunk and high on a boat.
Speedboat.
So he went out free as a bird. And this bird you cannot change.
All right. So it is WrestleMania season, Dan. I don't know. We talked last week. You're excited, right? We all get excited.
Always.
We're wrestling.
Always.
We're kids at heart.
I'm a champion at heart.
So I think we'll kind of talk about this year's in a couple of weeks when everything gets a little more finalized and we kind of see what the package looks like. I haven't really been watching the shows you know, too close, so I'm not really sure. Everything's finalized yet, but we'll kind of figure everything out. But this week, I want to talk WrestleMania 30.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Good one.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I didn't surprise you there.
Yeah, well, I'm working, because this is a wrestling show. I'm working. Kayfabe, brother.
Working
the
marks.
I'm totally surprised by this conversation we're about to have about this show that I watched in preparation.
This is actually all scripted, too. All of our lines. So, if it comes off bad, you can blame the writers. But WrestleMania, this was a weird time for WWE, right? Because, like, we had the network kicking off. There was, I think it kicked off that month in March.
This was the first ever network WrestleMania.
Yeah, not the first, like, kind of live network. I think they did the Hall of Fame that year, and they did, like, some WrestleMania pre-shows. It was actually a lot of fun. They did,
the
I think it was
first
Today WrestleMania.
Yeah, the first WrestleMania, or the first network pay-per-view was actually No Way Out.
Mm.
They did the dry run the month before.
Okay.
And it was like, well, okay, we'll see if this thing is a disaster or not. And then when No Way Out went off without too much of a hit, or whatever No Way Out was back then. It might have been Elimination Chamber by then.
Yeah, the February pay-per-view.
The pay-per-view before WrestleMania, you know, that was the first one.
So yeah, weird time, but even weirder was what kind of led us up to our kind of grand story of WrestleMania 30. And that story was Daniel Bryan versus The World. And it all kind of kicks off the SummerSlam beforehand, where you have Daniel Bryan beat John Cena, clean in the ring, wins the world title, and then you have, I think, Triple H turns on him. He's a special guest referee. Randy Orton cashes in his Money in the Bank, and Daniel Bryan loses the title after holding it for maybe a minute. And this was a decision that really bummed me out, Dan. I'll be honest. Like, this, it kind of turned me off for wrestling until, I think, January of the next year.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of people, too. Like, you weren't alone. It felt like, and these have happened in wrestling history before, where it's like, oh man, we're going for that good heat, and it's like, you didn't really get heat, you just made everybody mad.
Yeah.
Which is not the same thing. Like,
yeah.
So,
In case you don't know who's this Daniel Bryan character, he was a very beloved figure, especially if you're like an internet kind of fan, but he's a wrestler that won over a lot of casual fans too, because he was just had a fun gimmick where he yelled, yes and no at the crowd, and just had natural charisma, and he was a really fun wrestler to watch wrestle. People just liked
him. I think he was probably the best pro wrestler of the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And because of his size, he didn't get a shot in WWE until he was so undeniably good that, like, only an imbecile wouldn't at least let him on TV by that point. And in a lot of ways, he was basically Mick Foley, just of a different time.
Yeah.
Because
I think
Mick's,
that's what happened.
Yeah.
I think a combination of, like, Mick Foley and Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
I think Benoit's a guy that Brian's kind of, I think, will always kind of be compared to in a weird way.
Sure. He worked more like Benoit's style.
Yeah.
But he had the same dynamic in as far as WWE that Foley had, where it was just, guys like him don't make it here.
Yeah. And thus, but if you're a fan, especially the WWE fan base, who, news shocker, most aren't 6'5 and have six packs, Daniel Bryan's a little more like them. You know, like, maybe not the biggest guy, kind of an underdog, thought different, you know, maybe wasn't the most popular guy.
Had a big beard. The other end of that was that WWE, for so many years, it had so many big guys on television that they kind of devalued what it meant to be a big guy, to the point where, like, you know, Drew Galloway could walk out on TV, be 6'5" and 270 pounds, and everybody went, oh, whatever, that guy's not that big. Because when everybody's big, nobody's big.
You know, and I think that kind of mind-warped me as a kid, even. I remember as a kid seeing like an NBA player was like 6'6", and I was like, oh, that's not tall, you know, until like you see these people in person, like, oh, wow, 6'6" is giant, you know?
And then the first time you see, like, the first time you actually, like, stand anywhere close to Hulk Hogan, and you realize he's like 6'3".
Yeah.
And then
and
you
he's
realize
still huge,
he's
yeah.
Like, you realize he's huge, but you realize he's like 6'4" or 6'3". He's not, you learn it's a gimmick, brother.
Yeah.
You know, that's always a major moment in every young wrestling fan's life.
Yeah. So anyway, WWE does a story where Triple H and his wife, Stephanie McMahon, the daughter of Vince McMahon.
Stephanie's big return.
And continue to screw over Daniel Bryan. I'm sorry, what was that, Dan?
Stephanie McMahon's big return as a regular television character.
Yeah.
She had been a creative member for years and years and years before this, but this was her big return to TV.
So you have this story where these people, they continually fuck over Daniel Bryan, they screw him in matches, and as we got into January, to me it seemed like, oh, they'll have Daniel Bryan win the Royal Rumble, and he will go to WrestleMania and it'll all kind of be worth it. But that was not the plan of Vince McMahon's. No. Can you kind of tell us what the plan there was, Dan?
Well, the plan was to use Daniel Bryan to get the Authority over. And this is something we've seen, like, this has always kind of been the MO with WrestleMania, is that you take a heel and you get him over by feeding him a babyface who's top level, but not tippy top level. You feed it to that heel to get that heel ready, and then when the big babyface comes in to wrestle him at WrestleMania, they're red hot. The big examples of that would be Jake back in the 80s in the Hogan run. Jake Roberts' whole job was to get a heel ready for Hogan. Shine that guy up, get him white hot, and then when he finally beats Jake, he's ready to go face Hogan.
Yeah. I think the other example would be Mick Foley in 98.
That's the other classic example. Mick Foley spent most of 1998 getting The Rock ready to main event with Austin. And at the same time, Undertaker spent most of 98 keeping Austin occupied in between, you know, Vince McMahon. You know, you'd have a Vince McMahon challenger, and then you'd have The Undertaker. So The Undertaker was like the big guy, though, holding your interest until WrestleMania. So WWE's MO has usually been that the guy who spends all year or many months feuding with the top guy doesn't get that match at WrestleMania. That's a fresh match. That's somebody else coming in.
Yeah. But which is kind of a weird way, Dan, to kind of tell a story, because to me the story would be this guy keeps getting screwed and he finally gets one more shot and he pulls it off. You kind of have this almost a year-long story and it builds up to this great moment, but Vince doesn't really like those. He likes to have multiple stories going.
Well, I think that's more of just like thinking of it as wrestling a movie. Well, it really isn't, because the point is to promote a match people want to come pay money to see.
Yeah.
And people pay money to come see something fresh, something they haven't seen 50 million times. I want to be the one who comes and sees Hulk Hogan versus Andre. If you do Hogan versus Andre all year, well, who's going to pay to see it, you know?
Yeah.
So they always have to have that in mind.
Yeah. And, like, that is, mind you, that's a formula that has worked in the past very successfully for WWE and Vince McMahon. But it didn't really work with Bryan this time.
It didn't work this time because the choice they made was Batista to come in and be the one to end the Authority's hold on the title. But I think the other major thing that caused everything to get derailed was that they were building up two big matches for WrestleMania that year. One was going to be Batista returning from years away to take on his old Evolution mate, Randy Orton, and win the world title, and have the world title while he did promotion for Guardians of the Galaxy, which turned out to be the biggest movie in the history of the world.
Yeah. We'll talk about that later. In retrospect, the Batista thing maybe should have stuck with him. But we'll talk about that as we kind of...
No, you couldn't stick with it. But so that was the plan. That was plan A. And the second part of that was CM Punk versus Triple H. They had the match from the summer of Punk, but that was a thrown together thing because Kevin Nash, you know, started crying heart attack and couldn't make it, and Triple H had to step in. So now they're gonna finally do the match that everybody's been like, especially smart fans have wanted to kind of see. All right, I want to see the intrigue on this thing, and CM Punk quit.
So no, which caused, we're gonna do it.
Yeah, which caused an interesting thing to happen. All of those CM Punk fans immediately went to, well, who's our guy now? And the guy that they picked was not Dave Batista. It was Daniel Bryan.
Yeah. So, yeah, you have Batista going to win the Rumble. Yeah. But Batista,
everybody loses
Rumble.
Their minds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Booze. I think Mick Foley famously, like shot his TV like Elvis or something ridiculous. So yeah, wasn't the best, you know. And you know, I think back to this day, we're also at this time of like an economic strife. Daniel Bryan kind of represented to some of these people as your average Joe. He was you, you know.
They did Occupy Raw. Yeah, as weird as that is to think about.
Yeah. You know, we can talk about this later, but the Daniel Bryan thing kind of weirdly correlates like the Bernie Sanders run in the primaries. But obviously, like, because it's scripted, you know, it's maybe a more satisfying finish than what we got. but it was like this, it felt like a ground swelling from the people, and it felt like for once, Vince McMahon had to listen to his fans instead of dictate what they got.
Yeah, because I think the perfect storm was that Batista was a guy only coming in for a little bit anyway. So they didn't have that big investment of, well, we got to put him in the match. We got to keep Batista in the match. Yeah. Because they knew, well, Batista's going away, you know, in a couple months anyway. Shit, this is bombing. Fuck it, let's spin out of it. And yeah, let's fucking give the shot to Daniel Bryan. What the fuck? You know, and they basically, the Batista babyface run went so poorly and was so poorly booked and was so poorly thought out and every aspect of it. There's some weird similarities to Goldberg, and Goldberg hasn't gone off the rails to the same extent Batista did, but people want to see the legend come back. I don't think they want to see the 45-year-old legend win the title.
Yeah.
I think that's just, there's something about wrestling fans where they're like, the champion should be who's ever the best right now. And if the guy who's, and if it's a 50-year-old guy, it just rubs wrestling fans wrong.
Yeah.
I can't explain it. I can't give a great explanation for it. I can't even go, well, yeah, they're right. It's just, it is what it is, man. And people just did not want to see Batista win the world title. They just didn't want to see him in that match. They didn't want to see any, they didn't want any part of it.
No, and like you had crowds, it wasn't just like what are considered like the smart cities, like say Chicago or New York or Philadelphia. Everywhere, Batista was getting negative reactions for the most part. Some towns, obviously.
It became a thing.
Yeah. Became a thing, Batista. So it kind of changed course, and that's kind of how we get to WrestleMania 30. It basically comes down to Daniel Bryan has to face Triple H in the first match. He wins, he goes to the world title match. If he loses, Triple H goes to face Randy Orton and Batista in the main event of WrestleMania. So I think with that setting, let's jump into WrestleMania 30 from the Superdome in New Orleans.
The superest of domes.
The superest of domes. And the show kicks off in a pretty cool way, Dan. I think I'm sure some hardcore wrestling nerd got mad because it took away from match time. The show opens up with Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, and The Rock all in the ring together. And I love this. Even how many years later, I still thought this was really cool.
The three biggest the biggest stars in WWE history standing right there.
Yeah. And three of the biggest movie stars ever, you know?
Well, maybe if you go by an average, I guess they would average out to be...
If you average them together... They bring The Rock down to three, but yeah.
But you know, but Hogan, yeah. Hogan fucked up the name of the city and thought he was.
Or
he
called
Detroit.
It the Silver Dome instead of the Superdome, I believe. And they kind of made a joke. I almost kind of thought that was a work, Dan. The way it was like kind of quickly turned into a joke, but that seemed to be more because Austin
I just
Rock
think the Rock
so
is
great.
Fast. Yeah, like the Rock. And
Austin and the Rock are really good at improv, you know.
They went to UCB. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, I think Rock was in the Growlings, but yeah. Did you like this though, Dan? I loved it. So how did you kind of feel?
I always like shit like that. Especially I like when the old guys come back and they're just with each other instead of them all like pissing on some young guy, which WWE likes to do. You know, instead of it just being, hey, let's all take turns taking a shit on, I don't know, Rusev. Like, who I'm not sure was around at this point, but instead of doing something
I believe
like that,
Rusev debuted the next night.
Yeah, instead of just all taking turns shitting on a young guy, they just like, hey, man, let's all hang out and drink beers with each other. And it's like, yeah, feels good. Let's see some old guys.
Yeah, and a fun opening. And so then we cut to our next match. We get a first, I think we have to talk about this video package because it was so ingrained in your heads back then. That was Monster by the Imagining Dragons, with a little video kind of telling you the story of Daniel Bryan and how he kind of got to this match.
Are Imagining Dragons still around?
Yes, they are. You know that Nintendo Switch commercial? If you've seen it? That's them.
Oh.
Yeah, they're still around doing commercials. They're kind of like a perfect, you know, tens commercial band, if you will.
They had a moment where they were considered the future of rock music. If rock music was going to continue, that seemed to have come and gone.
Yeah,
rock is still
dead. So we get this entrance from Triple H. I want to talk about this entrance. What the fuck was, what kind of gay porno was I watching? It had to be what I was thinking at first. Can you describe this entrance? I don't know if I can without laughing.
Ah, oh, man. Well, it was the classic trait. I mean, my favorite thing about Triple H is every year when he does, like, the big, elaborate, ridiculous entrance. And this was the WrestleMania debut of Charlotte. I know Sasha Banks. And who was the third one?
Alexa Bliss.
It was Alexa Bliss, yeah.
Yeah, I believe so.
As, like, his attendants, as his concubines.
Yes.
His wearing golden masks.
No, and you also had... You had his wife, Stephanie, introducing him in some sort of, like, S&M bow tie-looking outfit or something. I don't know.
She looked like I can't describe it, but, she, like, her butt was hanging out, and
she had, a bow tie. Yeah. It was something, you know.
It was basically what Tucker Carlson jerks off to every night.
It was. So you have Triple H with the elaborate entrance. He comes out, and then here comes old Danny Bryan, you know, the little hippie vegan socialist, in just a t-shirt and with his arm bandaged.
Well, he had pants on. Like, don't give people false hopes.
Yeah. So, and then these two proceed to get into, like, what I thought was a really fun match.
It was Triple H's last great match. He hasn't had a match like that since.
Well, I think the next month, if you're going to count those six mans with the Shield, those are pretty.
I don't look at multi-man matches the same way, because, I mean, they're easier. Just you and the other guy in the ring, and there's nowhere to hide. And if it sucks, it sucks. There's nothing you can really do about it. You know,
regardless, I
haven't seen him have another match anywhere close to this after, you know.
This is, and Triple H is always a guy to me. He's a really solid hand. But when you put him in there with a great wrestler, whether it's Austin or The Rock or whomever, he can really put on a great show. And that's what this match was. There were times even years later I still, like, kind of balled some Triple H spots, especially that pedigree spot. Kind of near the end. I thought it was over.
Yeah. And I liked how he went, it wasn't just a Triple H match. Like, he went out of his way to, like, all right, I'm going to have a Daniel Bryan match too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just going to be, I'm going to do my shit. Like, he worked Daniel Bryan's style in there. I mean, he busts out a tiger driver or a tiger suplex at one point.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, maybe my favorite thing ever to see fucking Triple H doing a tiger suplex.
And you can tell probably Triple H had a lot of fun, I think, wrestling Daniel Bryan. He doesn't, you know, he hasn't really gotten to wrestle a great worker like that in so long. I think he had been running to, like, Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton for his other WrestleMania. I guess he had The Undertaker, but even The Undertaker's no Daniel Bryan. Obviously,
The Undertaker's a lot of smoke and mirrors and, like,
But he kind of, and Triple H is a guy who kind of, like, really enjoys kind of wrestling and kind of loves the art and how to put things on. And this was a really fun match. Like I said, I'm not going to give it a star rating, but it, you know.
I don't believe in that shit.
Yeah.
I'm not a nerd.
Yeah. But this was a lot of fun. Daniel Bryan wins.
It was the match of the night, in my opinion. Yeah. Like, it was the best match of the evening.
Yeah.
I would give it seven and three quarter stars.
Yeah. After Daniel Bryan wins, Triple H beats him down. So will Daniel Bryan show up for the main event? We'll find out in 7 hours. The show got a little long. So our next match, which is clearly cut for time, was The Shield versus the New Age Outlaws and Kane. Corporate Kane. He's not wearing a mask. I think this match went, 2 minutes and 56 seconds. The Shield wins. Anything to say about this match besides... The Shield's kind of cool masks.
The most notable thing about this match is that this is what should happen when an old guy wrestles a young, hot act. Like, they should get their ass kicked.
Yeah.
Like the job of, like, old... And I'm not talking about all old dudes. Like, I wouldn't do that with, like, Hogan. Like, hey, let's bring back Hogan and have him get squashed by Cesaro. Like, no. Like, you should protect your tippy-top legends. You should protect, you know, the Steve Austins of the world and their legacy. But when it comes to guys like the New Age Outlaws, where, yeah, they were a hot act and people liked them, but, you know, I mean...
Yeah, I think this is the perfect role.
Put them on, like, you know? Like, their job is to put over the next generation of guys, because they got a little bit of a name, but they're not... You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, they're not something where it's like, oh, God, if we don't protect them, a whole generation of fans will have their lives ruined.
Yeah, I think, and even, like, you know, they lost a lot, even, you know, back in their heydays.
Yeah, so everybody beat them.
They weren't world beaters. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a fun match, and there were better things to come for the Shield, but they were about done by this point. So we move on to the first ever prestigious 31-man Battle Royal for the Andre the Giant Memorial Trophy.
Have you ever seen a good Battle Royal that wasn't Royal Rumble style?
No, but I will say I enjoyed this just for the ending. And let's just jump to the ending because this thing kind of sucked. Cesaro picks up the Big Show, like in a body slam, kind of picks him up and carries him, I don't know how many feet, and dumps him out of the ring. That was an impressive feat of strength right there. And it kind of made Cesaro a star until they kind of fucked it up.
Well, that's the story of Cesaro's career. Hey, yeah. That really made him a star. Are they going to do anything with it? Nah.
No. But did you think that was pretty cool? I mean, I've never seen anything really that impressive in wrestling before.
It was one of the most impressive feats of strength you'll ever see in your life. Like, just,
yeah.
I mean, it's a work. Wrestling's a work, guys. Like,
yeah.
There's cooperation when you go up for a slam. I don't think I'm ruining somebody's life. Yeah.
But you know what's not a work, Dan? Gravity.
But, like, when you're able to walk, like, take the steps with the guy. Like, that always...
And not even struggle. Yeah. He looked like he was just carrying out, like, a big thing of trash or something.
Yeah,
you know?
And it's not like the press slam gimmick where the guy's pressing himself, like pressing up on your shoulders,
yeah.
So that, you know,
kind
he's
doing
basically
a push up. Yeah,
he's doing. Yeah, he's putting. You know, he's cooperating to help you lift him up. Like, you're just fucking hulking the guy. Like, yeah, I'm just carrying this sack of shit all the way around. I'm carrying like a 400-pound sack of shit. Watch me. Look how strong I am. Like, it's just that's some. That's good shit.
Yeah. So pretty cool. And you know, nice the Big Show to kind of not do a tribute to Andre the Giant and, like, deadweight Cesaro and, like, shit on his face or something. Like Andre would have done.
There's a lot of Andre stories.
Yeah, and they're not all nice. Andre was a piece of shit.
I don't blame Andre. If I got treated like a freak my whole life, I probably would be surly too.
Yeah, and I'd be really mean to my daughter too.
Okay,
so
I
let's
don't know
jump
anything
next.
About that, and I'm just gonna pretend. Yeah. I'm just gonna pretend I don't know anything about it forever.
Yeah. So there's some backstage segments in here. I don't know if you kind of want to just recap them all right now. I think WWE did like their classic dumb thing where they have all the old wrestlers who had like crazy gimmicks do like a weird dance party.
Well, okay, my favorite thing, old dudes dancing. I love it.
Yeah, and if you probably love this one, I think Ricky Steamboat did a little dance in like some sort of offensive karate uniform, even though he's not Asian.
Hey, he's half Japanese.
I was assuming he was just some white guy. So there you go, learning something new.
Yeah, his dad was a white guy and his mama was Japanese, and they met when his dad was stationed in Japan.
Aw, love story.
He's
any
he's
other
definitely
like,
not Hawaiian, though, which was his gimmick.
So, was there anything else that kind of happened in the backstage that jumped out to you, Dan, that you kind of liked or enjoyed? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it was, it was your standard WrestleMania fare. Like, they always are pretty good about giving you those little segments, you know, in and out, and they do a WWE's always done a good job of celebrating their history and,
yeah,
you know, making it feel like, hey, we've been doing this for a while. You know that, right? Like, we basically raised you. You're basically our children.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this segment with Orndorff, Piper, Mr. T, and Hogan. Even though everyone looked really old and it was kind of depressing, I enjoyed it. It was fun. Even seeing Orndorff up there, you know, as bad as he looks. I think this was the last...
With his one fucked up arm.
Yeah. I think this is the last time we saw Piper, though, on WWE TV. I believe... I don't know if he died later that year or the next year. But I think this was one of the last times we'd see him. Yeah.
But it was always weird seeing Piper and Hogan in the same room.
Yeah.
That's one where I know it's wrestling, but like I totally buy that those guys hate each other.
Yeah. Like, I always thought it was weird, Dan, to see Piper and a black guy in the same room.
Look.
Not to speak ill of the dead.
Piper's half black, but yeah, Piper was racist as fuck.
Yeah. I famously did blackface at a WrestleMania. Blackface, to be fair.
You can look it up. Like, that's not us. Like, that's not us fucking around. Like, you can Google it. Like, it's right there.
And I think most wrestling fans will even bat an eye at it. That's how much racism was kind of like thrown in your face, especially just watching WWE. You know. But anyway, let's jump to our next match. Johnny Cena with a sweet Eminem video. Takes on Bray Wyatt, who's played out by the band that does his theme song. Do you know the story behind this, Dan? Like how this band got the gig?
Educate me.
They put their song, I forget the name of the website, but they put their song on some website where people can find it and then like use it for, you know, their music videos or whatever. They kind of like what's the word? Like a Kickstarter kind of thing where you just kind of put your album out there, then a company or someone can find it and then license it out. Okay. So Bray Wyatt found this song before he got called up to WWE and said, hey, I think this would be perfect for my character, yada yada, and they used it. So this band gets the biggest break of their life. This is probably their biggest money-making opportunity ever. They get to play out Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania. That was pretty cool. Cool little entrance there.
Yeah.
Well, side story. But you know what wasn't cool, Dan?
This match? Yeah. Yes.
This match went 22 minutes, but you could have told me it went an hour. This was stall. I think this is to me when the show really started to slow down.
Yeah, this is I about said this was the second most boring WrestleMania match I've ever seen. First, obviously being the Shawn Michaels Bret Hart Iron Man match.
Mm-hmm.
But at least those two like had some cool spots at certain points. This thing just went and went and went and went and went, and then Cena just won.
Yeah. Like, it just wasn't a lot of fun, and like both these guys aren't really the worst workers, but they're not two guys I'd pair together. Because I'm not sure who's like the leader there necessarily.
Matches like this are the kind of matches where when people start doing that thing where they claim John Cena's the best wrestler ever, matches like this are why I always go no, because like to me, like if John Cena is not in the ring with somebody who's awesome, more often than not, his matches turn into this.
Yeah.
It goes 20 minutes because he's a WWE main eventer, and a WWE main eventer, to be important, has to go at least 20 minutes, and he's going to sell until it's time to stop selling. Then he just stops. Like, he is as Rob Van Dam as any indie geek, except he doesn't do all the other cool high spots. And then... when it's time to stop selling, he stops selling, does his move, and wins. And that's the end of the match.
Yeah.
I just don't think a guy who's had that many matches under his belt can be called the best ever or anything like that.
I've seen Cena even have good matches like JBL stuff like that.
I think history has shown us Bray should have won this match. Bray should have probably turned babyface.
Ooh, Dan, I don't know what just happened there. My feet got cut off. The lights started flickering. I think there's a dead man afoot.
Are we in the presence? Are we in the presence of the dead man?
Of the Undertaker.
The Undertaker!
So that jumps to our next match. Brock Lesnar, The Undertaker. This is probably one of the, like in retrospect, probably one of the worst decisions Vince McMahon maybe has ever made. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I had a weird feeling watching this match.
No.
It felt like watching your dad get beat up.
Yeah.
Like, everything about it felt wrong. Like, it's one of those matches where, I mean, obviously the finish was a very big deal because this is the match where the streak ended. But It made me wonder, like, man, did they ever, like, did, you know, was Vince sitting there at Gorilla going, God damn it, tell the referee to call it, like, don't, like, change the finish, like, this is, they had to have thought, like, halfway through this match, oh man, this, like, Vince had to have thought, oh man, I'm ending, this is how the streak's ending, damn it.
Well, damn and it. How much of that, though, was because of the Undertaker's concussion? I can't tell you exactly which bump or spot it was when it kind of happened.
It was on the outside early on.
Yeah, but it happens early on, and it just kind of ruined the match because he turned into like a literal zombie, not just a man playing one.
Have you ever seen that kind of infamous match that Cactus Jack had with Sandman in ECW? It was a Texas Death Match, which is like a Texas Death Match is like where you get pinned and then you have a 10 count to get back up or you lose. So it's like a normal max mixed with a last man standing. And like Sandman gets a concussion like 3 minutes in and just wanders around. And Mick Foley has to sort of have a match with a guy who has no idea what planet he's on, let alone that he's
more so than usual for the Sandman, a guy
more
who famously
so than normal
came to the ring.
Yeah.
Yeah, very fucked up. So I'm sure the concussion didn't help there. But, yeah. But that's kind of what kind of happened in this match, though. Like, you had Lesnar kind of to do the lead, and he's not the guy, really, to lead a match, unless he's just beating the shit out of you. And that's kind of what this turned into. And, you had the famous pin, and it looked like it killed the crowd, really. Like, you couldn't hear him. You probably could have heard a pin drop in the Superdome after that final hand came down. For three.
Have you ever read Stan Hansen's autobiography?
No.
Stan Hansen writes about a thing that they used to talk about in the old days of the wrestling where they'd call it silent heat. And silent heat in Stan Hansen, the way he told it, was like, when you got silent heat, you needed to run for your damn life because you were fucked. But like, silent heat was always when you did something wrong. Like, you've He tells a story about it happened to him. He was Stan Hansen's probably his most memorable run in America was in WWF and Georgia Championship Wrestling. And Georgia Championship Wrestling used to run a lot of the small towns around Georgia, and the black audience was always a really big deal in Georgia. You know, especially when your main city's Atlanta. So they're doing this spot show in some like rural town that's like 85% African American. And there's like a local town nut job who just runs around the ring, like acting like a foolish person. And Stan thinks, I'll get some heat. And he kicks that guy in the head. And the whole crowd goes silent. And Stan basically shits himself. And now he has to have a match because that all goes on before the wrestling match.
Yeah.
But he has a wrestling match with his opponent in a completely silent room. The only noise you could hear was reading between the lines, it sounded like the guy had like a mental problem, like a mental disorder. But the guy like gets up and just starts running around the ring screaming, I'm going to kill you, motherfucker! I'm going to kill you! I'm going to kill you! And then as soon as the match is over, the people start coming. They just start jumping over the barricades to come kill Stan Hansen. And he has to run for his life. He couldn't take a shower. He had to just grab his shit, run to his car, jump in it while he's in wrestling trunks, and then pray.
Yeah.
Now, shit like that doesn't happen where they want to riot and start killing you, but I think this was... I think the reaction to this match kind of tapped into the same, you did what? I just paid money to see what? This just happened? Fuck off.
Yeah. But it wasn't even like where they yelled anything. It was just...
Yeah, they were just...
It was just silent, you know? Build. It's hard to explain. I've never kind of seen a moment like that in sports or wrestling where, like, the fans just don't say anything. They weren't mad, they weren't angry, they were just, I think, disappointed and, like, shocked. Might be
and
the
just
best
not,
word.
It was not, like if you, yeah. It was not a positive.
No.
Like, you will sometimes still hear WWE, like, stands for WWE who will try to tell you, yeah, they put Brock Lesnar over really strong. Like, you know, they're really good at wrestling. Like, no. Like, Brock Lesnar got nothing out of this.
No.
It did not make him any... It did not make him a bigger star. It didn't make him any more popular. It just bummed people out.
No. And I think that's kind of the thing with the streak of The Undertaker. Was no one really wanted the streak to get broken. No one should have ever broken the streak.
And they didn't have
to. That should have been the point. Yeah. Like, fun was just, you know, no one wanted to see any... He should have gone out a winner. And they kind of didn't do it that way.
Like, the Undertaker, because he has that gimmick, he could have shown up until he's 70 and just, like, not even do a match. Just, like, every year, like, once he got so old and decrepit that he couldn't do anything, like, every year you just have some annoying celebrity or something come out. Then the gong tolls, the Undertaker shows up behind him, grabs him by the throat, and then, oh, yay, we saw Undertaker again. Like, it could have been a thing every year where you see the Undertaker. And you're like, oh, the streak. And the streak could have gotten so ludicrous that it's just like, oh, we saw him again. Like, there was no reason to stop it. And it didn't benefit anybody to end it.
No. And it would never benefit. That's like when people say, like, oh, you could have made a young star. No, that young star would have been a pariah forever. You just don't... It's just something you never should have ended. It should have been gone, you know, going on forever. Because people don't want to see streaks get broken sometimes, you know?
If you're going to break a streak, the guy has to be young enough where it's like, all right, let's see what he does next. When a guy's old and like this is his last thing left, that just makes people go, well, I guess that's it. I guess I'm not 13 anymore. Might as well put my shit away. Let's go drop some stuff off at Goodwill, honey. I guess I've moved on now.
So how does WWE respond to this? You know, what's next? What's going to kind of get the crowd back into it? And it wasn't this. The Vicky Guerrero Invitational match for the WWE Divas Championship. I'll list out everyone who was in this real quick. AJ Lee defeated Asuka.
Oksana.
Alicia Fox.
Oksana. How could you
Brie
not?
Bella.
How can you not know Goldust's gold-digging wife who just wanted a green card?
Because I, much like everyone else, was not watching that show then.
You didn't
Brie
watch
Bella.
NXT? How could you not? You're telling me you didn't watch the original NXT?
No.
What's wrong with
you? I was like in college. I was having fun. I had a girlfriend then, I believe, Dan. So I was too busy, you know, getting in arguments all the time.
Listen to this registered sex haver over here.
Yeah. But this is what you all said. Brie Bella, Cameron, Emma, Eve. Eva Marie, Layla, Naomi, Natalia, Nikki Bella, Rosa Mendez, Summer Rae, and Tamina Snuka.
Standards were very low back then.
Yeah. This is not quite the Divas Revolution that we would see two years later.
Hey, there's a reason why a revolution happened. Like, this was and any things to put on TV.
Any thoughts on this match besides it really sucks for someone like AJ Lee who... This was like her last kind of match. I think she did what?
AJ Lee wasn't very good. Like, AJ Lee is kind of lucky she came around in an era where everybody was terrible. So her being like a solid D plus curved her up to being a B. Like, she couldn't work worth a damn either. So, you know, she just didn't look like a fitness model. And like, there's that weird wrestling fan thing where if you don't look like a fitness model, you must be a good worker. Alexa Bliss is getting a bit of that now, although she is literally a former fitness model, so I don't know what the deal is.
She definitely looks like a fitness model. I like Alexa Bliss, but that's another debate for another
show. She cannot work her way out of a paper bag.
Well, we'll argue that.
If you locked her in a full-size wet paper bag, she could not wrist lock her way out of it.
Some would say that's kind of the charm, but regardless...
it's a chat. Okay. I will never buy the argument that it's charming that somebody has bad matches.
Well, but she's also, like, really cute, Dan. So I'm just going to let it go. Our main event, we finally get there. It seemed like it had been 3 days since Daniel Bryan beat Triple H. Plenty of time to recover. Daniel Bryan, Batista, Randy Orton, triple threat match for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. This match went about 23 minutes. And from when you hear people who are in the crowd at the show, this saved the show. For people in the crowd. I don't know if it comes off so well on TV, kind of the heat and the reaction, but from what I understand, people who are in the building, they say that people would have walked away from the show hating it because of the Undertaker match and loved it. because of what Daniel Bryan, Batista, and Randy Orton all did in this match. Because this match had everything. There were smokes and whistles. There was good wrestling. There was drama. There was a stretcher job at one point. Cool bumps. I love this match. Probably not as good as the first match, but still pretty damn good.
It was as good a match as you could possibly have with Batista involved at that stage of Batista's career. I don't mean to shit on Batista gets shit on sometimes. In Batista's prime, he was pretty good. For a guy like him who had the big muscle body and not a great athlete, like Batista had some good matches in his day. You could lead Batista through a good match. But at this stage of Batista's life, you know, been away from wrestling for years, was never, you know, got into wrestling as a bit of an older guy to begin with. He had terrible cardio in this period. You could blow up Batista, you know, walking from one end of the ring to the other.
No, and that's kind of like where
he got through it.
And that's where this whole thing kind of paid off for WWE. Because this was a really fun match, and it kind of only works because it's a triple threat. And you can let Bryan kind of run around and be the workhorse, and you can let a guy like Batista rest.
Yeah.
You know, who's not in the best ring shape. And that's not Batista's fault. Most wrestlers will tell you it takes about 6 months of working shows every night to get in really good cardio shape, you know. I think Steve Austin famously said it took him, what was it, like right before WrestleMania 7 or 17 before he actually got back in good, you know, ring shape.
Yeah, and plus any match with Randy Orton in it is going to be rough as far as being excitement. So, like, you need that third guy just to keep Randy Orton from ruining it.
Yeah. And this is a lot of fun, though. Like, I think the spot everyone remembers is the super RKO where Batista powerbombs Daniel Bryan onto a table, and Randy Orton catches him and does a reverse neckbreaker. And it actually let Randy Orton get the worst of that because his back lands right on a TV monitor.
Sure.
And some idiot didn't just kick out of the way.
This is probably Randy Orton's best match he's ever had in his life, isn't it? Or been involved in.
I tend to like his Undertaker match from 21, but that's just kind of me. I'm a bit of an Orton fan, though. So,
yeah. Orton can get fucked on a rusty bed of nails, as far as I'm concerned. That dude is on autopilot. Yeah.
So,
we should get it into third gear every now and again.
Yeah. But did you enjoy the thing? This was a satisfying thing, though. Daniel Bryan overcomes the odds. There's interference from the Authority. He beats up their heel referee or whatever, Scott Armstrong, and gets the win. He closes the show with confetti falling over him and the people going nuts.
Yeah, remember how we had so much hope? Oh man, Daniel Bryan's the champion. They're going to give him a good long run because what the hell else do they have? Batista's going home. Randy Orton has, you know, never really been able to make it as a champion. They're not going to go back to him. Punk's quit. Oh man, Daniel Bryan's going to get a good run and hey, the Shield, they're the new stars of the future. Like, man, WWE's future looks so bright. And then,
fun new era of wrestling. But in reality, it was probably a good ending to watching WWE full-time. Probably for me and a lot of other fans.
If you just stopped watching wrestling at that point, you'd be like, well, I wish I'd stopped before I saw that awful end of Undertaker's career. But, hey, that was a great... That was a great ending to the show, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, you saw the perennial underdog, the guy who was just a wrestling fan like me or you, who just busted his ass, become the best wrestler in the world, kind of achieved probably one of the cooler moments in WrestleMania history. I'd definitely put it top three for me on a personal level.
It just felt like if you were a wrestling fan in the mid-2000s, when all of those guys who were so great were just not allowed in the door. Just WWE, they couldn't even get hired by TNA. And TNA was like the drizzling shits. But TNA's viewpoint was well, we already got AJ Styles. We don't need any more small guys. Like TNA turned up their nose at Daniel Bryan. And then here he is, main eventing a WrestleMania, having two 20-minute matches, and standing tall at the end.
And let's be honest, save the show. If they would have gone with their original plans, that's not a very good show.
Yeah, it would have been a disaster. I don't think Punk and Triple H's first match didn't go well. It's kind of rare that guys who genuinely hate each other are able to have a great match.
Yeah.
Like, and Sean and
let's be
like,
honest, and at that point in CM Punk's career, he was pretty broken down.
Yes.
He never had the most athletic body, and at some point, time was going to catch up with him.
Yeah, Punk was falling apart, and it's just, like, Triple H, like, Bret Hart and Shawn never really had a great match once they became, like, once they had a falling out with each other. They couldn't really get along. Once they stopped getting along with each other, they couldn't really work with each other and have a good match. You know, it's just hard. It's hard when you don't trust the other guy to have a good match with him. And CM Punk and Triple H, I don't think that would have been a very good match.
No, I don't think it would have been. I mean, I think the heat would have been fun, and for me, the crowd reaction can make a match super fun. But it wasn't going to be better than what 30 turned out to be. It's just Batista, a fun show.
Like, Batista and Randy Orton would have been like the unholiest disaster in the history of disasters. Yeah. Like that.
So what we got was a, like I said, a fun ending and kind of the people's champion, if you will, went out on top.
Yeah.
You know?
And he never wrestled again. Don't pay any attention to that horrible Kane feud.
Yeah. So like we said, things, you know, afterward didn't go so great. There were some fun Shield Evolution matches, but WWE hasn't really been as, I think that was kind of the pinnacle for me as a fan. It'll probably never be that fun again.
Yeah, it's just, and the fallout of the show, Daniel Bryan's neck went out on him. He missed most of the year.
Yeah. His dad died.
His dad died a week later. Yeah, his dad died like a week after the show.
Yeah, and then the little sick boy, we didn't really mention him, but he was kind of became like a bigger part of the show. I think that was one Mr. Connor, the Crusher. Little sick boy, kind of stole everyone's hearts. YouTube the video if you haven't seen it. Good luck not tearing up. Sweet little kid. I think he passed away a couple of weeks after the show, but he got to be in the front row to watch his hero Daniel Bryan win.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty cool moment.
You know, functionally, Daniel Bryan's career was over within like a month of this show. And, you know, they ended up replacing, you know, he was supposed to drop the belt to Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. They ended up replacing it with Cena, who had the famous, you know, got suplexed 11 times, you know, match with Brock. And then they, you know, they broke up the Shield. They turned Seth Rollins heel and they totally botched Roman's solo push. And he never was able to recover.
Yeah, and Dean Ambrose, too, to be fair. Yeah, they kind of had something special with him and kind of blew it.
They completely misjudged who was more over of the two. They thought the big star was Roman and it was actually Dean.
Yeah.
And they spent the last 3 years blowing that. the news is Roman Reigns is slated to main event next year's WrestleMania with Brock Lesnar.
So get excited. Yeah. So kind of recap, kind of put a nice bow on everything. Pretty fun show. I'd put it, you know, kind of carried by two matches, but there's enough bells and whistles, like the opening, Cesaro in the Battle Royal, some fun skits. I think this is a top 10 WrestleMania. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, it felt like a bigger show at the time. I think age has sort of weakened it a bit because you found out that a lot of the stuff that we had so much optimism for ended up, well, that shouldn't have been optimistic about that sport. I end up feeling sad about this show in a lot of ways because it's like, oh man, Daniel Bryan really did. Like, this was kind of the end of his career in a major way. Instead of it being the beginning of a whole new run or a new era, it was kind of the capstone. And it just doesn't seem fair.
Yeah. But, you know, it kind of replaced the WrestleMania 20 ending for me as my, oh, my smartdom finally kind of won out. That one does not look so good.
That one holds up worse. that doesn't make it.
Nothing better than watching a serial killer and a drug addict hug.
Well,
it
he
out.
Wasn't a serial killer.
Well, serial killer just means you killed more than one person.
Nah, it means you killed more than one person over time.
Oh, I don't. Well, they that was over time, over a couple of minutes.
They have to be discreet murders over a period of like months or years.
Regardless.
Look, I know the definitions of serial killers, which I just realized sounds bad. Like I did, but
But yeah, that'll probably kind of bring us here to our closing moments. Next week, we're going to be back to sports. We're not going to always stick to sports. I think we're going to do our big WrestleMania preview. Maybe some guests, maybe not. We'll find out. But yeah, I think next week we're going to kind of dive into March Madness and everything that's happening. And I'm sure there's stuff that we haven't been paying attention to that's happening right now. Who knows who's blown a lead and who's Cinderella? You know, we're going to kind of discuss all the fun and the wrap-up from that. But before we get out of here, Dan, anything else? Any FUs?
Oh, fuck you, the week. Northwestern grads.
Yeah.
I've had enough of them.
Michael Wilbon. Just fuck off, dude. Just please go away.
My good friend Donald Trump, or whatever the fuck Wilbon does these days. Everybody's his good friend.
Yes. So that's kind of my FU of the week. So next week, return back to the predictable world of sports. Maybe a little less zany sometimes in wrestling. But
hey, Muhammad Ali was a Gorgeous George fan. Never forget. Sports steals from wrestling.
All the time. Because, last year's NBA Finals, that was like wrestling to me. And it was kind of wrestling.
Yeah, it was a comeback. It had the comeback. Shit, you had the heel. You know, the heel got the heat. And then, bam! Here comes the babyface comeback.
Yeah. So, and then you had LeBron wearing the Ultimate Warrior shirt. Oh, and you know what? Another thing that happened after the show, Dan. The next day or 2 days later, the Ultimate Warrior died.
Yeah, that fucking piece of shit finally croaked.
Yeah. What a shame.
Yeah. Fucking dumb shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another fuck. Fuck you, Warrior.
Fuck yeah, fuck Bigoted you, Warrior's asshole. Dead body.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm glad a cripple's getting his award. I don't care if that just doesn't honor his memory.
Yeah, his memory was shit, and people who liked him are shitty.
Yeah.
people who defend Warrior in 2017 are shitty. So fuck off, Warrior.
And most wrestling fans over the age of like 35. Fuck you.
I'm not 35 yet, so.
Yeah. And they probably voted for Trump. So,
honestly. Look. Hey, politics. Hey, stick to sports. Stick to fake sports. Well, it sounds like we've about come to the end. We're starting to get giggly. So, Owenson, shine up your best Jim Johnson impression. And play the music, Jason.